Okay, it is now time to begin the teleconference, so I'm going to go ahead. We'll have, still have people ringing in, but I'm going to begin the recording of the teleconference and welcome all of you to our teleconference today with Dr. Lance Secretan. This is July 28th, 2010, and Lance is the founder of the Secretan Center in Ontario, Canada. He's the author of numerous books, and we're going to be talking about his newest one today, which is The Spark, The Flame, and The Torch. The subtitle is Inspire Self, Inspire Others, and Inspire the World. So we're going to do a quick check-in. And several of you have already done that, but if you can just quickly say your name and location. And some of you will talk over others, but that's okay because we're just going to get all of your voices together in this community and just quickly say hello and name and location. And don't worry if other people are talking.
This is Tom Anderson in Overland Park.
I'm Austin Strathmore from Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Maine. Alberta.
Helene in Tilden, California.
Very well.
Wanda in Boston.
Nancy Yancey in Georgia.
Paul Kuzinski in New York.
Gary LaTrade in California.
And they have
Alan Tyson, Rogers, Arkansas.
All right, wonderful. Thank you all so much for being on the call. And I want you to know that this call is being recorded, and I am not able to find out how to mute. I was trying very hard to figure this out, but we were having trouble setting up the recording. So we are not going to be muting you. If you want to mute, I believe you can do star six. And then
Lisa,
you can.
And Jenny.
Hi, Lisa. So you can mute yourself by doing star six on your phone, or you may have a mute button. And then what we're going to do is start with an opening reflection, and then I will introduce Lance, and Lance and I will talk about his book for about 20 minutes, and then we'll open the phone up for you to ask Lance questions or share some of your own inspiration. And for Lance to be able to share whatever else I didn't ask him about that he wants to share. And then we'll close with some announcements and with a closing reflection. And Lance, I'll be giving you the last word, so know that you do get a chance to be the last person to close the call for us today. When you do speak, we ask that you say your name first so Lance knows who he's speaking with. So we're going to begin now with a moment of reflection and just 30 seconds of silence after that, which might get interrupted by people chiming in on the phone and saying hello, but know that we're holding a space of sacred silence, even if there's some noise in the silence. This quote comes from Lance's book, The Spark, The Flame, and The Torch, from page 26, and Lance writes, "How might the world look if we became fully conscious, inviting the soul, the leader that resides within, to complement our learned leadership style? The result would be the practice of inspirational leadership, which we're all capable of, but that requires our conscious and ongoing commitment in order to achieve its full expression." Please join me in just a short space of silence. Thank you so much, and I want to welcome all of you who are on the call from all over the United States and Canada, and we may even have some folks from other countries besides Canada and the United States. It's my great pleasure to introduce you. Hi, welcome. It's my great pleasure to introduce Lance Secretan to you. Lance is acknowledged as one of the most insightful and provocative leadership teachers of our time, and as a business builder and a former CEO of Manpower, Inc., Lance has known firsthand the obstacles that lay in the path of achievement. His experiences have led him to develop new leadership and management techniques that inspire, motivate, and fulfill employees at every level of the organization. His corporate clients include 30 of the Fortune magazine's most admired companies and 11 of Fortune's best companies to work for in America. He's a speaker, retreat leader, and business advisor, and he's inspired executive teams with a new brand of motivation, showing them, in Lance's words, that the key to leadership lies in timeless values that help us to be of service to others. As I mentioned earlier, he's the author of numerous highly regarded books that inspire people and organizations to look at their work in new and invigorating ways, including a book called One, The Art and Practice of Conscious Leadership, a book called Inspire, What Great Leaders Do, and another book called Reclaiming Higher Ground, Creating Organizations That Inspire the Soul. And we've been able to have interviews with Lance about several of those books in the past, and I'll be telling you later where you can access those previous interviews. I've had the privilege of knowing Lance as a colleague, a friend, and a trusted advisor for many years. Lance and I have worked together on the International Spirit at Work Awards, and several of his clients have received recognition for their commitment to nurturing the human spirit. He is generous, he's caring, and he truly radiates a loving presence. Lance, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great pleasure to be here, Judy. Thank you. It's good to be within your presence, too.
Oh, thank you so much. Today we're talking about your latest book, The Spark, The Flame, and The Torch. I love the subtitle, Inspire Self, Inspire Others, and Inspire the World. And this title, Lance, it conveys three really beautiful images. Could you tell us what you mean by the spark, the flame, and the torch?
I will. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this call. One of the things, the book is really about leadership, excepting that in the early part of the book, I have begun to wonder whether we have been overdoing the leadership thing. There are about 50,000 new books published every year on leadership, and I'm wondering whether we are slightly off the target when we focus so much of our energy on leadership, because it seems that maybe we should be focusing a little more tightly on inspiration rather than leadership. If I give you an example, George W. Bush, this is not a political statement, George W. Bush might be thought of as an effective leader, but I think many people would say that he was not able to inspire as well as he was able to lead. I think Obama, for example, might be looked upon the other way as a man who's very effective at inspiring people, but maybe hasn't got his arms around the idea of leadership quite yet. No doubt he will, but because it's early days. But you see the difference that I'm getting at. In reality, nothing really happens unless we inspire someone to change or to do something different or to grow. And leadership on its own, therefore, is not enough. So the book really talks about the three pieces, the spark, the flame, and the torch. And the spark is the whole notion of becoming inspired. We can't give what we don't have. So if we're to be inspiring for other people, then first of all, we have to become inspired ourselves. So the spark talks about how to become inspired. The flame talks about how to go out in the world and be inspiring with others and therefore change the world. And the torch talks about how do we coach, teach, mentor, pay it forward, help others to grow, create a legacy. So it's really about the handing on of that inspiration for a world that can be sustained on a continuing basis. So that's the spark, the flame, and the torch.
And that's how the book is organized in those three sections. And you also have, instead of chapters, you have reflections. So say why you did that. This is an unusual way to organize a business book.
Yes, because I think that it's a very dense book. It covers 35 years of theoretical development, and I've tried to create an overarching theory that covers those 35 years of our work. And so it's fairly radical in many ways. I challenge a lot of existing practices and ideas, and I want people to think about them a little bit. before just charging on to the next one. I mean, this is not a book that you need to read between Chicago and Los Angeles. It's
yeah.
a book that you want to reflect on and digest the ideas and see if they actually make sense to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually in terms of connecting inspiration and reflection, you're walking the talk in the way the book is designed.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
Well, and you know, all of your work has focused on inspiration in one way or another. In fact, I want to give a quote that you write early in the book. Inspiration depends on relationship. Inspiration cannot occur unless one human being touches the heart of another. And in this book, you actually suggest that there's a pledge we could make regarding inspiration, and you suggest this could even become a movement. I'd yeah. love it if you'd tell people about that.
Well, and thank you for that, because I think we need all the help we can get to make this a movement. And actually, we're just in the process of redesigning this, so any advice and support and help you can offer would be wonderful. But here's the idea, it's a very simple one. If we were all a little more inspiring every day.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Therefore, change the world. I don't mean if we were completely inspiring all of the time, because that would be very, very difficult for many of us to do. Everybody there?
Yes. What I did was I finally figured out how to mute the background noise.
I see. Good. Well done.
I thought
you muted me there for a minute.
No.
But if we were all a little more inspiring, then we wouldn't fly planes into tall buildings. We wouldn't be nasty to each other in the workplace. We wouldn't be ugly in the Senate or in the Congress. I have two campaigns going on at the moment in both those chambers to try and change the way that conversation occurs. And I'm also having some success with the Canadian Parliament, where I've been visiting with them, trying to suggest to them, why don't we do this in a slightly more inspiring way? Because frankly, it's not setting an example for how we should be conducting our lives. And young people that come into the world look at people in politics and say, this is an inspiring thing, why would I do this? And do these guys really hold the key to our fate, and so on. So, you know, there are examples that we need to take. So the Inspire Pledge, inspirepledge.com, you're writing, just go there, click and pledge to be a little more inspiring than we are right now.
Well, I hope that every single person on this call goes there and does that. After reading this part of the book, there's a suggestion that every morning you wake up and think about, or make a commitment to being inspiring each day. And I don't know how long I can remember that each day, but I've really been trying to do that, and it shifts your whole consciousness. It's just a beautiful concept.
And the other thing I think that one can add to that is one of my all-time favorite quotes, which is Robert Greenleaf, the developer of servant leadership, and he said, "Will what I'm about to say improve on the silence?"
I like that a lot. Thank you. So in one of the concepts that you talk about in this book is the social self and the essential self, and I found that a very interesting distinction. Would you share about that?
Yes. The social self is the external measure that we use to determine our success or effectiveness. Will people like me? I'm beautiful. Will I succeed? Will I meet my budgets and my targets and my goals? Will my children love me? You know, and so on. So it's always an external measurement, and so we adapt ourselves to the social self. That includes the careers we choose. You know, very few people actually choose the career they want. They choose the career that was available, or the one that their parents guided them to, or the opportunities that occurred at university or school, or career guidance counselors and so on. So it's rare that somebody is doing the thing that they are passionate about. And that's an example that we deal with in the book. But, you know, that's the sort of thing that we do all the time when we're calibrating ourselves against the social self. Now, the essential self is the true authentic voice inside. This is the yearning within us. This is our soul. And if the soul in the morning says, I wish I were writing poetry, but I'm now going to cut steel, then clearly the essential self and the social self are out of alignment, and this is the source of a lack of inspiration.
And so, so much of your book is about giving voice to the essential self, and one of the concepts that you do that through, or actually three concepts and processes, are destiny, character, and calling.
Right. The part of the book that's the spark, which deals with how do I become inspired, the first step really is to identify who we are and to get at that essential self, to live that essential self. See, the point of the book really is how do we live inspiring lives and how do we inspire other people? And what we know is that someone who engages with you from their essential self is an inspiring person. Someone who engages with you from their social self, in other words, a plastic or wooden or contrived person, isn't inspiring. And most of us are sharp enough to see that. So the whole idea of really going through the exercise to begin with of identifying why we're here, what's the purpose of our lives, destiny answers the question, why am I here? And there's a whole bunch of exercises in the book about how to do that.
And character. Examples. You give lots of wonderful right. examples as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. And character, it defines how we want to be while we're in the world. What are the characteristics that we want to be known for, that we want to practice and live? And, you know, when it's all over, what will they say about you? And lastly, calling is the way we use our gifts and talents to serve the world. So it's the intersection between the world's needs and our deepest desires. So we identify those three pieces, and of course what happens for some people is that they're not in alignment currently, so there is some calibration to be done there. So, you know, that may mean changing jobs, or may mean taking a course that will help us to move in a particular direction, or it may mean repairing a relationship, it could mean lots of things. But whatever it means, once one's achieved that, that's the first step to becoming inspired.
And so the book actually walks you through in very practical ways how to get much clearer about destiny, character, and calling. In a way, it's almost like a workshop in a book.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. And the other thing about it is that I've written two previous books about that subject, and this is a yet another revision and update of the thinking and the theory that was developed. I mean, tens of thousands of people have been through workshops. You're working through that. So I've had the great advantage of being able to practice and learn from that and therefore tweak the theories. So this is sort of latest version of those things.
And as you said to me when we were talking about this call, this is really a culmination of things you've been thinking about and working on for years and trying to create the sort of integrated theory of Lance Secretan.
That's right. Yeah. And the benefit, too, of some pretty formidable organizations and corporations that we've been working with who have worked this through and practiced it and proven it. Mm-hmm. So, had the practical experience.
One of your books is a book called One, The Art and Practice of Conscious Leadership. And in that book, and in this book as well, you talk about the one dream in your reflection number 5. One being capital letters, O-N-E, the one dream. Could you say something about that?
Well, this is one of those places where I really challenge what we've been doing, because in most organizations what you have is mission, vision, and value statements. And we also have this at the personal level, too. That in fact, at one point, Dilbert had a mix-and-match feature on his website where you could go and choose from three columns and get yourself a mission statement. I mean, that's how banal it has become, and most people roll their eyes when they hear about mission statements. And the reality is that I could take your mission statement and, despite everybody else's on this call, shuffle them up in a big pile and give them all back to everybody at random, and nobody know whether they got their own back or not, because they're all the same. They all look green. They all say the same thing. You know, that's totally uninspiring. So my thinking is, why don't we just turn the volume up completely on this? And the reason that the one is in capital letters is because we only need one dream. We don't want multiple dreams. I know a lot of people, I'm an athlete, and a lot of people I know have been to the Olympics this winter. past winter, and I know that when you go to the Olympics, you don't get there without a dream. It doesn't matter whether you're a 23-year-old Shaun White or a 37-year-old Alexa Liu, it doesn't matter. Nevertheless, that is one single dream that's powering that person, and that's how they get to the Olympics. If we want high performance in any part of our lives, whether it's in the organizational level or the personal level, we need a dream. And we have developed and perfected over the years a whole process for developing a one dream statement, and it's quite remarkable. I mean, I use the example of Humana, which is a big health insurance company, and we helped them develop their dream because, you know, at the time, Obama's banging on the door saying health insurance companies are evil and bad, and we're going to run you out of business, and you're overcharging, and you know, all this stuff. And they didn't know that. They're a $30 billion company, 75th biggest company in the U.S., 30,000 employees, and they don't know whether they're coming or going or whether it's breakfast time. I mean, it's just very, very difficult and challenging for them. So the dream galvanized their energy. It kept them sane and straight and looking forward all of the time. And more than that, it gave them the future that they were looking for, regardless of whether Obama changed their game for them or not. And their dream became helping people achieve lifelong well-being. Now, the next thing that happened for them was that they went on acquisitions. They just bought a company called Hummingbird Coaching in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is going to help them pursue their goals of achieving lifelong well-being for people. So you see, the dream started to steer their decision-making and their strategy and their forward thinking. And therefore, it's not an airy-fairy idea like a mission statement. It's really our DNA, our heartbeat. It's what makes us tick. It's why we're here. And you harmonize all of the energy in the organization behind one dream, it becomes deeply inspiring.
And totally transforms the culture of the organization.
Right.
Yeah. Well, another part of what you talk about that really, you've experienced this, and I know this through the case studies of organizations you've worked with that have received the Spirit at Work Award, is values. And you talk about the flame as being connected to values, and the castle principles are one way that you approach organizing values. And we actually, you and I did a teleconference back in 2006 all about the castle principles. So I want to refer people to that. If they want to listen more in depth about the castle principles, they can do that by finding that teleconference on my old website, which was www.spiritatwork.org. There's a wonderful recording of that. But I think many people don't know about the castle principles, and so can you just in a minute or two say a little bit about them?
Why don't we just run the recording?
No, just please.
You know, here's what happened. You will have gathered that, and Judy knows this, I'm a radical, because one of the things I did, I'm very fortunate, was I ran a big company, retired early, and then I've spent the time ever since then trying to understand why organizations don't run better, and I've sort of upped my game a little bit in trying to understand why the world doesn't run better either. So one of the things that I've done is researched, well, what's not working. I mean, mission statements is a good example, but there's lots of other things that aren't working. Why is that? And one of the things we did was we asked followers, what isn't working for you with leaders? And here's what they told us. Now, make a note of this, because it's quite amazing. They told us, we don't like cowards. We just can't stand leaders that are cowardly. We don't like cowards as the number one thing. And we don't like people who are phony and fake. That was number two. Number three is we don't like people who are selfish. Number four was we didn't like liars. Number five, we didn't like people who ruled by fear. And number six, we don't like incompetent people. Now, you wouldn't think that this was such a breakthrough revelation, really, of characteristics. And yet, believe it or not, this is probably the predominant system of leadership right now. Many, many leaders, probably more than half, are cowardly, inauthentic, they are selfish, and so on. So we said, you know, what would happen if we just did the opposite of that? What would happen, and this is, by the way, a recipe for lots of great things. You know, the Constitution of the United States is simply a statement of a problem written in reverse. We don't want to be taxed without representation. The reason that statement is around is because America was being taxed without representation. So this is a statement of the problem written in reverse. So that's what we decided to do. Let's write the problem in reverse. So we end up with courage, authenticity, service, truthfulness, love, and effectiveness. That spells castle. If we go out into the world courageously, authentically, serving others, telling the truth, being loving, and being effective, we'll change the world and we'll inspire the world. And that's what those six reflections in the section on the flame are all about.
Thank you. Thank you. And you actually have ways of measuring this if individuals and organizations want to know more about it, and audio programs and all kinds of support around all of these thoughts and processes.
I'm especially proud, too, of some of the stories. I think the story about the U.S. Air Force bomber and the German fighter plane, for example, during the Second World War, and I knew Charlie Brown, the bomber, he told me that story. So it was quite a striking example of how fundamentally wired we are to be loving, and how adrift we've become from that idea, which is not natural. I mean, our social self is telling us to be aggressive, warrior-like, and so on, but our essential self will tell us to be loving.
Yeah. And I hope more and more people are learning to do that. The world needs it so badly. So the last concept that we got just a minute or two to talk about right now is the torch. What else would you like to tell us about the torch before we open up the call?
Well, in the torch, there are two areas that I take to task, as it were. I don't want to be too hard on this, but I am questioning, in the same way that I question mission statements, I'm questioning two other things. One is coaching. I'm a big fan of coaching. I am a coach. I coach people all the time. But I think we haven't really figured out the metrics of coaching. I don't think companies really know whether they're getting a good deal on coaching or not, whether they're getting a payback, whether there's a metric they can measure, is it getting better or not. You know, in every other form of coaching, sports coaching, for example, in voice coaching or acting coaching or just about any field you can think of, there's a very clear way of measuring, are we getting a return or not? Is the person being coached getting better? But in leadership and life coaching, it's very fluffy, and it seems to me we need a harder way of measuring this, and we need some criteria to help us get forward. And the other field that's much the same as that, I think, is performance appraisals, performance management, performance assessment, whatever language you want to call it. But, you know, if I would ask the group on this call, do you love your annual performance review? Yeah, I bet it would be hard for me to find somebody saying yes. Or if I asked, do you love doing performance reviews? Do you love setting aside a week and doing 17 of them a row? Is that a lovely week for you? And most people, I think, would throw up. So, you know, why is it we're doing this in every organization? We have it as a benchmark for a good corporate behavior, and yet everybody says it's not working, it is horrible, we haven't figured this out properly, and so on. So I have attempted to develop an entirely new process for both coaching and performance management, which I think is a breakthrough, and it is very technically robust and supported on our website. And it, I think, is a breakthrough way of dealing with both coaching and with performance management. Because what we're trying to do is to help people to grow. And if we're inspiring them, we now need to say, well, can you sustain that? Can you keep doing that even though I'm not around anymore? And I'm not here to help you these days. So what will you do now? And how will you carry on that message? And how will you change the world? And how will you repeat what we've been through with a spark and the flame? So that's the summary of the torch.
Yeah. So you've put a carrot out in front of people and enticed them with some very intriguing thoughts and ideas. And you referred to your website, which is www.secretan.com, S-E-C-R-E-T-A-N.com. And before we open up the call, is there anything you want to say about the website that might also entice people to go there?
Well, it's very rich, as you said. There's a lot of free things there for everybody who has a copy of the book. There's a free five dynamics profile. We haven't talked about that in this conversation, but that's a personal self-assessment tool that helps you to build inspiring relationships. There's a free vector survey, which is really about leadership assessment and performance management. There's also a free CASEL survey, which measures where you stand on the CASEL principles, and you know, to the degree to which you are courageous, authentic, and so on. So three free tests. I mean, those alone, I think we sell those, I don't know, probably about $400 or $500 between the three of them, so pretty good value.
The other thing that I just love on your website are the e-cards.
Yes, if you go to our website, the Spirit of Work cards, you can send a card, one of 77 different cards, with a message to people, and you know, that's been very, very popular too.
Great. Well, let's open the call and see what questions or comments people have for you. So I'm going to unmute, and when people join, ask Lance a question, please say your name.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
Good morning, Lance. This is Deborah Darlington from outside of Philadelphia. And thank you and thank Judy for putting this fabulous, fabulous teleconference together today. One of the questions that I have, you said you put so succinctly into words the concept of alignment for me. I am a business owner, and my business is called Inspiration in Progress. And one of the tenets, I guess, that I offer is that the persona that we are on the platform has got to be the person that we are off the platform, and that we have got to be aligned. My question to you is, when you're dealing with major corporations, how open are they to that, and how do you get them to that place where they're open to have those conversations? Or do you? Are they already open when you work with them?
I think that this is a very good question, because it's a business getting kind of question. And the way I look at this is this way. I'm not trying to be a multinational corporation consulting with millions of companies. I'm just looking for a few companies who want to set a standard and to set a tone for how the world could be. You know, in the front of the book, I argue that if you were to take Walmart, which has 150 million shoppers every day, employs over 2 million people, you take four other companies or five other companies like Siemens, McDonald's, maybe Honhai Industries, and so on, those six companies between them would employ 10 million people, including my old company, Manpower. They touch around 2 billion people every day on the planet. If we could change those four companies, we'd change the world. And we would do it more effectively and more quickly than we would if we were to sit down with the Roman Catholic Church or with any major political organization on the planet, including the United Nations. Because they have more power, more clout, more reach, and more interaction with people than any of those others. So, you know, that's where the power to change the world lies. Now, therefore, we need to talk simply to those people who are already on the journey and are looking for better ways to do what they already believe in. We don't need to go to arms manufacturers and ask them to stop making weapons of destruction and change their whole mindset. I mean, that's just frankly pushing a rope uphill. And, you know, there are other people no doubt trying to do that, but it's not the way I see my role. My role is to work with companies like a Humana, who already get it, who are already brilliant and doing incredible things, and all I'm doing is just being a guide for them, helping them to think new ways and to extend and expand the way they're already thinking.
Thank you so much. Lance, I have a question for you. My name is Susan.
Hi, Susan.
I work at a corporation as well as in volunteer work with churches. And I wonder what you've experienced about the dark side of value. It seems to me like the higher a commitment a group makes to living authentically by their values,
more attacked they are. They're externally the bigger attack. And I wonder if you've had something like that to experience.
So say that last part again for me. There were a lot of noises going on.
Yeah. Seems like the higher commitment a group makes to living their values,
yes,
the more attacked they are. Like either a church, you know, getting their own inner or external attacks, or an organization, you know, not being able to make money while they're trying to live their values. It's
yeah.
That commitment brings on some difficulties.
Yeah, I see. I think what you're saying, if I understand you, is that the more you put it out there, the harder you make it for yourself, because you're putting yourself on a pedestal, as
yeah.
it were. It's easy
yeah.
to knock you down. Yeah, I think my response to that is I don't really care. I think it rather depends on how you do that. If you do it from an ego place, which is, hey, look at me, aren't we wonderful, we tell the truth and we look after third world countries and blah, 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 you know, then I think you're creating a problem. But I do use the story of Apple Computer, for example, early on in the book, where actually it's in the service reflection, where, you know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is the largest trade organization on the planet, decided that they don't believe in climate change and that all the regulations that the U.S. government is introducing that would mitigate that are simply counterproductive and not good for the nation. Well, Apple Computer wrote a letter to them saying, we flat out disagree with you. We have spent a lot of time creating manufacturing processes and policies that recognize climate change, and we are doing all kinds of things to lower our impact on the planet, and you are in a counterproductive journey, and we are resigning. Now, I mean, that what that does, you see, is something I describe in the book as voice. What's happened here is that Apple's voice has been amplified, and I love their phones, as everybody does, although I don't own one, but I love the phones, but I love what they stand for, too. And yes, they'll take knocks, and yes, they'll get banged around, but it's much more important that they make that clear to all of the people who know Apple, that this is what we stand for. You're not just buying a telephone, you're buying a set of values that we live by.
Yeah, great, thank you.
Lance, Jerry Bryan.
Hi, Jerry.
Do you think organizational structure or design can, you know, to influence group dynamics or relationships has any relation to inspirational theory?
Yeah, I think it does. In fact, I just had a conference call earlier this morning where a bunch of healthcare systems are merging into bigger, you know. And if you've been around as long as I have, you've seen this all go around in circles. So, you know, I was saying to the person I was with who's sort of guiding this transformation, you know, if we live long enough, we'll see this all come back again and be unbundled and made back smaller again and so on. There's one company that has drawn my attention over the years. Called Magna International. I don't know if you know them, but they are the largest manufacturer of OEM parts for cars. So they make hubcaps and dashboards and canopies and seats and trunks and moldings and all kinds of stuff. You know, basically every car on the planet has some stuff of theirs in it, and in some cases they actually make the whole car, like the BMW Z4. Completely manufactured by them.
Sorry, there's some background noise.
Let that noise go away.
Yeah, so there's some kind of vibration noise that some in the background. If someone can hit *6 and mute, that would be helpful.
Yeah, it's a little better. Thank you. They have built a business that's a multi-billion dollar global business, but they have never allowed anything to get bigger than 100 people. So they have hundreds of thousands of employees, but they're in hundreds of factories all over the world. And every time it grows to 100, they split it off and start another one. And I think there's great merit to that, because one of the things I think we all know is that you can't really understand anything more than 100. You know, if you have 100 close friends, your brain is going to be overworked just trying to remember their birthdays and their children and who they're married to and what their hobbies are and so on. I mean, it's just a very big headache. So 100 is sort of a human brain capacity. So trying, when I look at something like BP, who has been a client of mine for many, many years, I on the one hand, I can't imagine how this happened, because it certainly wouldn't have happened under Sir John Brown's watch. I think Tony Hayward's watch was a different matter altogether. So it is about leadership. But the other thing is, I think that here's an organization that is so vast. How could any one human being understand it? How does any chairman of a company that size know what's going on 2 miles underneath the ocean?
So span of control is important.
Absolutely. Yeah, and understanding the nuts and bolts of what's going on in the business.
And that's great. And I have one more quick question. What's the key difference between inspirational leader and a charismatic leader, like in trait theory?
What was the last word?
Like in trait theory, as in trait theory.
Oh, I see, right.
Charismatic
right.
leader versus right. your theory on inspirational leader.
Right. Well, inspiration, you know, another a different way of asking this question might be this way. In the book, I make quite a big case about the difference between motivation and inspiration. Motivation is really about how we manipulate other people to get something we want. So sales incentives, you know, profit sharing, bonuses, bigger offices, more budgets, you know, those kinds of things. Inspiration is really about creating the environment in which another person becomes excited, exhilarated, inspired, and so on. So, you know, one is fear-based and one is love-based. And the charismatic piece, I think, can work in both cases. But what worries me a little bit is when you mix charisma and motivation, in other words, charisma and fear, that's a recipe that looks like Hitler.
Yes.
Whereas if you mix charisma and inspiration, that might be a recipe that looks more like some of the more, like, let's say Mother Teresa, Martin Luther King, and so on. So you have a different, do you understand what I'm saying? I think it depends what you add the charisma to. Charisma is very valuable, but not an essential ingredient. Inspiration is.
Okay. I understand. Thanks.
Lance, Larry Ford in Connecticut.
Hi, Larry.
Thank you, by the way, for the work that you're doing out there. It's fabulous, and I'm going to run out and get your book.
Thank you.
The question I have for you is, how do you handle all this? What's your organization look like? What's your structure look like?
Oh, pretty scattered. you know, until 2 years ago, we had an office and a whole bunch of people in it and so on, plus, of course, a virtual team. And then 2 years ago, we sort of said, this is sort of feeling a bit like a social self kind of thing. You know, hey, look at us. We have a fabulous office and all that. So we said, why don't we sell the office, which is what we did, and everybody disbanded and went to work wherever they lived, and that's how we work now. And we're a completely virtual organization. We have faculty all over the world, we have coaches all over the world, and we have a core team that's actually dispersed as well. So, and we are much more technically dependent now than we used to be, technology dependent, so that's played a very big role, which I don't think we could have accomplished, you know, 10 years ago, let's say. I don't think we had the technology to knit us all together. And it's even more complicated than that because I live half the year in Canada and I live the other half of the year in Colorado. I'm a passionate skier, so I spend the winter skiing and working. So in many ways, it doesn't matter where I am or where anybody else is, as long as we're in touch with each other and working tightly together and inspiring each other.
Great, thanks.
By the way, anybody who wants to send a Spirit of Work card, just go to secretan.com/spirit card.
This is Kathy. Can you hear me?
Yes, Kathy. Hi.
Hi. I love what you're doing. And my question is, I have a team that works virtually, and it's very challenging to keep everyone on board without seeing each other face-to-face. In my experience, is that your experience?
Yes, it is. And we work pretty hard at that. My core team all lives sort of, you know, within 50 miles where I am. So we meet pretty well weekly when I'm in Canada. And then we talk on the phone for about the same amount of time, so a couple of hours once a week when I'm in Colorado. So that's how the core team collaborates, and we're on IM together all the time as well. Faculty is a different matter. Faculty is spread around a lot more, and what happens there is that we're usually on site with clients, so that's where we're working together and collaborating more. We collaborate together to create the events and the experiences that we work with our clients on, but then we actually physically are there with the clients, so when we're there, we have lots of social time together, lots of one-on-one time. But I agree with you. We do need that. Now, I fancy that there's going to be a future where that probably won't be the case. You know, the 10-year-olds today that never speak to each other but always text each other. I mean, maybe they'll be a new breed of human species that never needs to actually interact. But I come from a generation that still does need that.
Well, and there is this movement back towards community, which seems to be what people really need in order to stay inspired and live an inspiring life. So I love all the ways to connect virtually, but I'm also looking for some way to have everyone really have the experience of being on the path together.
Yes, I agree with you. Yes.
Hello, Lance and Judy. This is David Witt in Ashland, Oregon.
Hi, David.
And, hi. And it's clear that we're going through major shifts in so many ways in every part of our society and world, and we need to. I'm just wondering, you know, there are many thought leaders around, and I'm wondering, are there key people who are picking up on what you are presenting and understanding it and working with it to help bring it to their networks and the like? It seems this is a very important piece of your brain.
Well, I think the answer is yes. We work with about a third of the Fortune's most admired companies and 12 or 13 of Fortune's best companies to work for in America are clients of ours. Two of them got there because we helped them to get there. And in towards the end or latter part of August, I'm actually running for the first time ever a certification where I'm going to invite a very small group of people to come and join me and live with me for a couple of days, and we're going to teach this work and teach how it's taught and build a curriculum for certifying others. I haven't been doing that for a number of years, so clearly there's a demand for that, and so I'm meeting that demand. And if you, any of you are interested, let me know, and I'll let you have the details of that.
This is Judy, and that's the torch work, isn't it?
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, what we want to do is make sure that people really understand how to do this. And for instance, we've had some great questions in this conversation, and they're questions about how did this work and how can we make sure it succeeds? And I think that's what we want to talk about when we're huddled together.
And Lance, how can people get in touch with you?
Just write me at lance@secretan.com.
We have time for one more question.
Yes, Lance, this is Tim Shea in New York.
Hello, Tim.
How are you?
Good, so and nice to hear your voice again.
Well, I'd love to hear yours, of course. I'm really struck by your use of the word love. It's powerful and evocative and simple. And one knows that in business, that word is an unusual term of reference. And what I was struck by your talking about wanting to work with those who are on a journey of sorts, you know, want to discover or be empowered to express those deeper yearnings in their workplace. And you just referenced now that most of my companies are the best places to work. And I'm well aware that those companies typically also do well better over time in terms of their competitiveness and their profitability. Are there other ways that you find useful to source potential partners in the work that you do, in terms of, you know, market research, like most admired best companies to work for?
Are there examples of what?
Well, let's ask. Can we ask everyone who's not talking to do Star Six because we're getting background noise. It's making hard for Lance to hear. So go ahead, Tim.
Well, I guess my question was, are there other ways that you find useful to identify people who might be open to exploring their potential, their latent human potential in more ways, like lists like best, most admired, best companies to work for are probably good places to?
Yeah, I'm probably not a good person to ask that question because we don't do a lot of hunting or fishing for business. Typically what happens for us is somebody will call us and say, we got this challenge we're working on. Do you have any ideas for how we can deal with it? And we get a lot of our current clients referring us to other clients too. So it's not an outfit that does that sort of fishing around. Now, having said all that, I am very committed to the web, blogs and Facebook. We get a lot of traffic through our Facebook page, even Twitter, which I'm not a big fan of, but I recognize the value of it. Those devices and the Pledge is another place, too, where we're getting a lot bang to us. I love this idea. Is there more to it than that? You know, and so on. So I think those devices, and for that matter, the book are inspired by it and say, okay, I want to do this. And that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being on the call. We're going to do a couple of things for closing. I'm going to give you a few announcements, and then we'll do a closing quote, and then I'm going to turn it over to Lance for last words. Just a few announcements. First of all, that this teleconference is sponsored by the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace at the University of Arkansas. And one of the things we're going to be doing here is reinstituting the Faith and Spirit at Work Awards, which were done before in my previous organization, the International Spirit at Work Awards. And Tim Shea was really helpful with us on that, and so was Lance. And a number of you on this call have been involved in that in one way or another. So I'm sure you'll be delighted to know that we're going to be bringing the award process back and having a conference in 2011. The conference is called Dialogue and Discovery, and it will be a way of bringing together the leading researchers on inspiration, on spirituality, on consciousness, on faith, and also bringing together the organizations that have been honored and have received awards for being inspiring organizations and really nurturing the human spirit, as well as bringing together faith leaders who really can bring something from their traditions to deepen this dialogue. So I want to give you those announcements about both the awards and the conference. Another announcement is that the university is in Tyson Center.
Me, but maybe someone hit the mute button. We can't hear you.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
I'm sorry, you can't hear me? Can you hear me now? Let's see. Well, now I won't know.
All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
All right, let's try that. Can you hear me now? I've unmuted everyone.
Yes.
I can hear you, Judy.
Okay, and you,
yes,
you,
I can hear you.
We're not able to hear the announcements, is that right?
I heard them.
I
heard you. Okay, so just a quick summary. We're going to do the awards again for Faith and Spirit at Work Awards. We're having a conference in 2011. Hello. And we are offering a certificate program on leadership, faith, and spirituality at the University of Arkansas beginning in September. And the final announcement is that we are going to continue this teleconference series, and our next teleconference guest is Tom Anderson. Tom is the author of a book called Your Place in the World, Creating a Life of Vision, Purpose, and Service. And it's so much in alignment with Lance's work. And so if you were inspired by this call and by Lance, first of all, we encourage you to buy his books and go to his website. And if you can, participate in any events that Lance leads. And then secondly, to know that there are other very inspiring people who also share this vision of a world that's much more loving and more sustainable, and one that where everyone can live an inspired life. So Tom will be a wonderful guest. Tom, you're on the call, is that right? Can't hear him. Okay. So that call is Monday, August 30th. It's at 3 p.m. Central, and I will be sending out a notice about that. If you want more information about these calls, and if you didn't receive an email from me and heard about this from someone else, you can email me to get on our list, and that is J-N-E-A-L, J. Neal, at Walton, W-A-L-T-O-N, dot U-A-R-K, that's U-A-R-K, dot E-D-U, and I'll put you on the mailing list so that you know about upcoming events. So that's my announcements. Lance, do you have any announcements before I do the closing quote?
Well, I've made announcements about the Inspire Pledge and about our certification. I think the last thing I would like to say is this. The book is very pragmatic. It is a spiritual book, but it is pragmatic. And I think that that's an important message for all of us to remember, is that we are speaking to people whose first priority, generally speaking, is, will this make money? Will it help me with my share price? Will it impact the earnings positively in the next quarter? Will it increase market share? Will it lower retention? And so on. So all of those questions really are the drivers. And so what we need to do is, whenever we're talking the way we are about making the world a better place and creating a more inspiring planet, we need to hook it up to the language that people actually understand. As soon as we start going into the woo-woo world, you know, in California speak and so on, we end up with losing people and losing their attention and not making our case effectively enough. So, you know, my advice would be to follow the patterns of this book, which I'm sure all of you already do, which is to speak the language of the listener, not the language of the speaker.
That's wonderful, wonderful advice. Thank you so much. And Lance, it's been such a great pleasure to have you on this call and to learn more about your latest work and to support you in getting the word out about that. And I do want to read a closing quote. This comes from page 215 of The Spark, the Flame, and the Torch. And Lance writes, "We don't change the world merely by going to work in the morning just to manufacture widgets or produce reports. We change the world by engaging our heart, that most amazing, complex, and powerful instrument of human potential. And we do that by going to work to live our destiny, character, and calling, to be of service to each other, to realize a dream, and to contribute to the healing and recovery of the planet. Each of us has chosen a different means of working, different skills, different organizations, products, and services. But we can all unite in a shared goal to celebrate and honor each other and to make our planet a more peaceful, beautiful, loving place." So, Lance, you do so much to do that, and thank you again for being on the call, and we look forward to much more interaction with you in the future.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I've enjoyed it.
Okay.
Thank you, Lance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.